Also, we have a special program. Back with us tonight for another wonderful conversation is Mr. William Tompkins. Bill has been with us, I don't know how many times now, but he has been obviously nudged to become a main part of the ongoing disclosure of alien visitation, alien occupation, and the fact that we are out in the solar system and the universe with some extraordinary hardware that that we have in deep space. And we've talked about so many things, and you can listen to all of those conversations anytime you'd like just by going to Rents.com, looking over in the right-hand column down to Bill Tompkins. You'll find it right there. The archives are all available. February 25th, 1942. What happened on that date? The Battle of Los Angeles. We're going to talk about that tonight and other things as well with Bill. I've got some videos to show you, which we'll look at as we get going here. And even a newscast that came, I believe, that next morning, February the 26th. It's a recording of a shortwave national newscast dealing with the Battle of Los Angeles and what went on over that city of almost 2 million so many years ago. Hello, Bill. Welcome back. How are you, my friend?
Real good, Vince. Ready to go. This should be really interesting this evening.
Yeah.
I think everybody's going to enjoy it.
Well, I hope so. And if they don't, they're missing something. Now, let me ask you, and just for you folks who don't know, Bill is, how old are you, Bill?
39. Actually, 93 next month it'll be 94.
Wow. I remember when you turned 93. Wow. Seems
yeah,
like
right.
Only
okay.
Yesterday. We've been working on this project quite a while. The idea of watching something like the Battle of Los Angeles is amazing to my mind. It may be the most watched UFO encounter, and I'm going to call it encounter. It wasn't just a sighting because it lasted a long time, and it involved the American military coastal defenses. World War II, December 7th, had just happened, and this object came over L.A., made one pass, and then made a second pass going back over L.A., and I mean Culver City, the West Side, down to Long Beach, the whole thing. Fascinating, and it was shot at by dozens of ground batteries, and the videos you're going to see tonight are extraordinary. How old were you, Bill, when that happened?
Oh, I was still 39.
Okay, good enough. All right. So, in other words, you weren't in the crib with a baby bottle, and you were actually up and able to watch it.
That's right, yes.
Okay. Five people at least died that night, for those of you who don't know. There were fatalities, heart attacks, shrapnel came down. I think there was one automobile crash. This was a big deal. It started at 2:35 a.m. and went on for at least an hour. Big, big deal. Tell us the story, Bill.
Well, this is really interesting because nothing like this had ever happened. And Jeff, you're describing it as being one of the most important sightings, if you want to call it that, that's ever taken place. And it really is, because you're going to find that there were more than several vehicles involved. Okay.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Now, essentially, my folks had moved to Long Beach, and we were living in a very large, expensive home that had been converted to four apartments, and the living rooms downstairs were all 18-foot ceilings, so the second floor is real high, and there was a enormous deck all the way across the back of the house, and we, of course, had an upstairs apartment. So we could overlook a lot of trees and a lot of buildings because we were so much higher.
Right.
Now, we were only four blocks from the beach, but of course there were other buildings between us and the beach, so we couldn't see the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But around 7:30 in the evening, my brother and I were laying on the floor, and I think we were looking at the newspaper. My dad went out to the... My mom and we were visiting her mother back in Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. And so there was just the three of us. So my dad was out on the back deck, and he told... He said, boys, get off here right now. So we got up and went out to the deck in the back. And there was a small light just above the surface that we could see, which would be building some trees.
Mm-hmm.
And then this light got a little bit larger, and a very small beam came out of the light and focused down to what would be the ocean, because we couldn't see the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
And so
what color was the beam, Bill? What color was the beam?
It was almost white.
Okay.
And so this we watched this for like 2 or 3 minutes, and you know, what's this? Because we've never seen anything like that before.
Right.
But then what happened was the little tiny beam came up towards the center of light being straight down, and then came all the way up and went focused directly into our eyes. Now, this has to be something, because it lit up all of the buildings, all of the trees, everything around us was lit up like brighter than the sun. And we couldn't believe what was happening. So the light went out, and the big beam light went out.
Huh.
So now what's really strange here, wait a minute, here is we talked about this, we finished dinner, and instead of going to listen to the radio, because we didn't have TV then, we went to bed. We were sort of bored.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to bed early. And then around 1:30, 2 o'clock or something, the anti-aircraft guns went off all around us. And so we're only four blocks from the beach, okay? And my dad was a block warden for that area because the war was on. This mm-hmm. was 2 months after the war started.
Right. What city were you living in, Bill? Excuse me. What city?
Long Beach, California.
Right in Long Beach. Okay.
And so I have to say one thing ahead of this, in that Long Beach got a brand new breakwater about 6 months before this event took place. And they moved, the Pacific Fleet moved into that breakwater.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Atlantic Fleet came through the Panama Canal, and it joined the Pacific Fleet. So you couldn't believe how many ships, battleships, cruisers, destroyers, aircrafters, just off of Rainbow Pier. Okay.
Wow.
In Long Beach.
Yeah.
And now the war's going, so some of those are gone. But the point was, we're only 4 blocks from the beach. And what took place was unreal. Because we went outside, everybody in our neighborhood came out into the street. We looked up, and here was one very large circular vehicle. And if you take everybody in the audience, if you'll take your hand and open between your thumb and your fingers and put your arm above your head, that's how big this thing was. It was not a little spot. Okay.
It's about as big as a baseball.
Right. And it's not the one that was put in the newspaper. There's only really one photograph ever in the newspaper, and that showed 8 searchlights shining on a circular whatever.
Right. Kind of an oval shaped object. Yeah.
Yeah. This thing was moving from the ocean towards Hollywood and Los Angeles, going east towards the mountains.
Uh-huh.
Now, when it got a little bit past the center of Long Beach, it stopped. And the anti-aircraft guns were firing at this vehicle, and it was clear enough to see the explosions, which were thought to be on the bottom of it, because it's all lit up with 15 or so searchlights.
Sure.
And it's bright, and that's an awfully large thing to be in the sky right above us.
Was it a round object, Bill? Was it round?
It was a round object.
Okay,
it
like a ball.
It was a round object.
All right.
Yeah, no, not a ball. Flat.
Okay.
A round, flat.
All right.
Option.
All right.
And so the explosions on the bottom of it, which obviously we figured out later on, it had some sort of a shield, because that stood there for over an hour being fired at. Now, what also hasn't been published is that the entire time till like 4 o'clock, we think, there were other vehicles. None of them came underneath of it, but other smaller vehicles, 7 different classes of vehicles, came on either side of it. Some of them went up above it. And they continued to fly over very slow. And you couldn't miss with an anti-aircraft gun. And, of course, none of these that we saw got shot and then were brought down. So from our standpoint, where we saw it, nothing got shot down at all. We did, like Jeff said there, found out later that several of them did get taken down. Two of the smaller disc shape went down, one behind Mount Wilson,
uh-huh,
where the telescope is,
uh-huh,
and the other one went down just off of the new breakwater in Long Beach. So it was like less than a half a mile.
Well, the Navy got and that so one, and the Army got the other
Navy
one.
The Navy grabbed that one. Right, yes.
Now, let me ask you a question, Bill, if I can, please. This is fascinating, because you saw this, you heard it, you felt it. The explosions going off overhead, the AA, what were they, 20 millimeter? I don't know how big they were, but they were powerful.
Most of them were 3-inch anti-aircraft guns.
Okay.
Now, what's also interesting, Jeff, is that now we have half of the Navy still inside the breakwater.
Yeah.
Being prepared to go to the Pacific.
Yeah.
So every anti-aircraft gun on the Navy ships were firing at these vehicles.
See, nobody talks about this but you. That's fascinating.
Not only that, but remember, we had the Navy dry docks, an enormous Navy
shipyard.
Shipyard.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found out later that many of the ships that were actually in dry dock there was only a skeleton crew on board. Those fellows jumped, got their ammunition, and started firing too. And they used up all of their ammunition. The Navy used up most of their ammunition, and the Coast Artillery used up everything they had. Now, roughly 3-4 vehicles did come down, okay? But to stand underneath this situation for that many hours, and I'm going to say something else which really sounds ridiculous. We got bored at that, and we went to bed. Most of our neighbors watched it the whole night long.
Wow.
So it really operated from around 1:30, 1:30 to 2 o'clock, till around 4 o'clock.
Bill, I got another question, if I may. When you were earlier, 7:30 in that earlier evening, on the deck, watching this light over the ocean, put a little beam down, and that beam ended up swinging up toward you and your brother and your dad, and lighting up everything around the house like day, Do you feel that there could be some kind of a connection between that event and you're getting, quote, bored with this thing and going to bed?
No question. Not even that. But many of the top Navy people who have done investigations on me were to the conclusion that actually we were zapped and I got zapped. Okay? And so what that had to do with the rest of my life in aerospace, I don't know. But the conclusion that the Navy surgeons came up with was we got zapped.
You were possibly changed at that moment for the rest of your life, is what you're suggesting, to some degree.
That's what has been said, yes. And as the night went on, we got bored again and went back to bed. And we didn't wake up until till around 4:30, 5 o'clock. And it had stopped. Now, don't say that nobody got hurt. Some people did. But stop and think of all of the ammunition that's being fired up there all over Southern California, from Santa Barbara to San Diego. It didn't just come in over Los Angeles, Long Beach, and Santa Monica. These vehicles, and there were like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vehicles. And this point that I've made before in trying to explain what we thought took place was that there's only two ways that this could have been accomplished. One, a massive number of extraterrestrial military vehicles came in over the ocean, continued slowly to go across all of Los Angeles, California, and incidentally, we're saying, yes, Santa Barbara too, and San Diego. So what had to have happened is these vehicles had to go like out over the desert, turned south and turned north, other turns going west, fly back out over the ocean, turn around, and come back in again. Because they could not have been this many of them operating that way. And the other approach is, yes, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of different classes of vehicle, small and large, even rectangular-shaped vehicles, triangular-shaped vehicles. Now, the newspapers only published one photograph with a small small light lit up the vehicle and the searchlight shining off.
Yeah, you can see that.
And
online.
Yeah, and nobody said anything about the great big ones. This, the one was there for an hour. He parked there for an hour and let the guy shoot at him the whole time. Now, this is ridiculous.
Yeah. That's wild.
Let me
do this, Bill. Hold on. I think this is a good time to. I'm going to play this video. Look under Bill Tompkins in Guests, and you'll find several things to look at. What I want you to pull up is the YouTube video, original footage and broadcast. You'll see it right there. Now, I'm going to play this, 3 minutes long or so. It's got a broadcast, a newscast, and you've already discerned from listening to Bill that there were a number of things that went on that night that were never reported to the public, never. But here's what it really sounded like on shortwave, coast to coast, that night, the Battle of Los Angeles.
Once again, Columbia's correspondents in world capitals and in the fighting zones in the Western Pacific are ready to give you the latest news direct by shortwave radio. And now for news of our own West Coast, we take you to Los Angeles and the report of Byron Palmer. Anti-aircraft guns went into action against unidentified aircraft in the Los Angeles area shortly after 3 a.m. Pacific wartime this morning. The anti-aircraft guns began barking during a blackout ordered by the 4th Interceptor Command at 2:25 a.m. The unidentified object, which some sources thought might be a blimp, moved slowly down the Pacific coast from Santa Monica and disappeared south of Long Beach. Army officials declined to comment on the possibility that the object might have been a blimp. However, it required nearly 30 minutes to travel some 25 miles, far slower than an airplane. Watchers on the rooftop of the Columbia Broadcasting Building in the heart of Hollywood could plainly see the flashes of guns and searchlights sweeping the skies in a wide arc along the coastal area. Concussion of the shells could be felt in downtown Los Angeles, 15 miles away. U.S. Army planes quickly took to the dark skies, but whether they contacted the object has not been announced. Army officials say they will not comment until they receive a full report of the action. Although some watchers say they saw airplanes in the air, semi-official sources say they probably were the U.S. Army's pursuit. Several observers say they saw one or more planes spotlighted by 20 or 30 searchlights. The object moved southward, presumably over Huntington Park at the western edge of Los Angeles, and on southward to about Long Beach on the coast. By 3:30 a.m., observers said the object appeared to be over the south of Long Beach. Searchlights closely followed the object down the coast and kept it centered in their glare. Shells frequently could be seen bursting near the object, but none appeared to hit it. The shooting stopped about 3:30 a.m. The shooting brought warfare to the front door of this city of 1.25 million population for the first time since December 7th. Already, it was alert to the presence off the Southern California coast of a Japanese submarine which had pumped 25 shells into an oil field north of Santa Barbara Monday evening. Because of the presence of the submarine, a three-hour alert was ordered at dusk last night, and civilian authorities stood at their posts while the Army and Navy continued their search for the submersible. The evening alert ended at 10:23 p.m., but another was sounded at 2:22 a.m., and the blackout followed within 3 minutes. It covered Los Angeles County from Santa Monica to Pomona. At 2:27, all Southern California radio stations were ordered off the air, except those in San Diego. Approximately 20 minutes after the firing died down, the ship returned and headed westward from Long Beach toward Santa Monica. The guns went into action again, hurling round after round of shells at the object. The second barrage appeared to be closer to downtown Los Angeles, since watchers could hear the concussion of the guns more clearly, and the flash of bursting shells was brighter. Then the ship disappeared for the second time over the ocean. We return you now to CBS in New York.
Well, there you go, Bill. And, you know, it's interesting. Wow. They called it a ship twice in that report. A ship.
Wow. They're a little bit off on both the start and the finish because it was much longer.
Yeah.
And they're way off when they say that the vehicle went parallel to the ocean, up and down, because it came in from the ocean, parked, and then went east after an hour stationary over Long Beach.
Right. Well, that's to be expected when you have so many people giving their bird's eye view of what happened. So I'm not surprised by that. It's a very unreliable way to actually get reality into words, but they did a pretty good job. They got the idea across that something very large had happened. They also admitted something which isn't talked about much, that the Army Air Force sent planes aloft immediately, because I have a friend who was an air raid warden, and she was ordered out of her home. She lived in Culver City. She had her hat on and all that. She said she watched the whole thing when it went over slowly above her. She said it was the most beautiful thing she'd ever seen. The color of it she'll never forget, she told me. And that this thing was up there, and she said, I was watching our aircraft, our fighters, 4 and 5 in a row, approaching it and firing and then peeling off before impact. So they were beating it perfectly, coming right at it, 4 or 5 wide, our fighter planes, shooting at it nonstop and then turning off at the last minute. She watched all of that.
Well, from people that I have talked to that were also there, military, naval, there were at least four of these really large ones that came in because they came in over Santa Barbara all the way down to San Diego. And they only came from the ocean over Southern California going east. Nobody went, none of them stopped, turned, and went up and down the coast. So obviously, like you say, that was just the radio report was just
right
to try to cover the situation.
Fascinating to think that there were large craft and hundreds of small ones of different shapes and sizes. What you're describing is a major incursion into planet Earth from off-planet intelligence. This had nothing to do with the war, of course. It was simply a coincidence. I'm not sure that
not
those...
Tell me more.
Tell me more.
Okay, hold on right there. Hold on. Remember, we were playing with nuclear. Okay? You don't do this out in the galaxy. And if you are testing nuclear bombs, and that ricochets out into the galaxy.
I've heard that before. Yeah, that's picked up everywhere for some reason.
And the reason being that this was one of the reasons. Other extraterrestrial civilizations came here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, this Los Angeles event was today understood to be NORDIT, naval operating battle groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so they came here not to do anything to us, but they were just monitoring after we have been playing with nuclear bombs.
Now, this is 1942 in February, and I don't know when the first test that we... It was in New Mexico. It was 44, I believe, or 45, the first bomb we actually lit off. The Manhattan Project was just beginning to come together in 42, 43. By the time ending late 43, they were up to full speed trying to come up with this this atomic bomb. So I'm wondering if they came here in 1942 prior to us exploding an atomic bomb, but being aware of the fact that we were already going down that road. That would make sense to me.
In other words, we didn't do the big thing on it in a way talk. Okay. Those came later.
That's right. Inside
the laboratories. Study to go do this. Now, this is a very good point because people... Most of us here don't visualize that extraterrestrials are so much further beyond us technically. I mean, it's staggering. So they have the ability to be out in the galaxy and watch what you're doing inside of a laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you say that's insane.
Not me.
Sorry.
These people have
that capability.
Mm-hmm.
And we were starting to do this. And that's a no-no out there.
Got it.
Okay?
Well, it should be a no-no here, too, but it's not.
You're right. And nuclear,
July 16, Bill, July 16, 1945 was our first official atomic bomb explosion, the Trinity test. And that shows you how quickly we got this together. Some suggest that the two bombs dropped on Japan, that one of them was a uranium bomb, the other was a plutonium bomb, I believe. And the uranium bomb came from uranium that we captured from a surrendering German U-boat off New England. And that a lot of the uranium we used in that bomb was actually enriched by the Germans.
Yes.
So, okay.
People were playing with this. Then the decision was made to use it. That came much later, but for the audience here to believe that extraterrestrials have unbelievable technical experience. They can accomplish unbelievable things. And one of the most important is the fact that they can mind control everybody on the planet. And I know people don't want to hear this. They're saying, well, gee whiz, nobody's going to control my mind. Unfortunately, this is a fact, technically, and all of us are controlled, some of us more than others.
Well, we have our own government trying to mind control the masses through the cell phone towers, through the electric grid, through all kinds of EMF emitters. So mind control is something that we're well advanced in, too, although we can't compare with what they had. But it's interesting to hear you say that they were aware of our early nuclear testing in university laboratories and so forth. Yeah, yeah.
And like you said, Jeff, it was a microscopic piece of space-time between they saw what was going on in the labs and then we used it. Okay?
Yeah.
That's amazing. For them, holy cats. What are you people doing?
Right. Wow. Yeah, you're doing the big no-no. And let me ask all of you, if you are online, to please go to rents.com, look for the guests, and look for that video that I just played so you can enjoy it, because it has some live action film in it of the actual night, 2:30, 3 a.m., of the anti-aircraft being fired at the object. Now, remember, you're only going to see one object in most of the pictures. It's one object caught in the cross beams of a number of searchlights. It's a disc, an oval disc-looking white glowing object, and you can see around it the little white dots, which are the anti-aircraft 3-inch shells going off. So take a look at that video. It's fascinating, and I've got another one there we'll get to as well. You can look at them if you want any time during the program, of course, because what we've done is scour the net and come up with as much real video of real film, live-action film, of the Battle of Los Angeles that we can come up with. So it's there for you to look at. Now, Bill, tell us more. We're going to go back. We're going to go back to you're out in the street before you got bored and went inside and went to sleep, and you're watching this. Are you seeing the searchlights focused on any other objects other than the one that we traditionally see in the photographs that we are allowed to see?
That's the interesting part about this. It went from 8 or 10 searchlights to 2, because the other guys would shine their searchlights on a delta-shaped vehicle that by comparison is only as big as your fingernail.
Uh-huh.
But it's delta-shaped.
Uh-huh.
It's pointed. Okay,
so
they would focus it on rectangular vehicles.
So that's how you know there were different shaped craft up there. You were watching the searchlights acquire these things and illuminate them, and you could tell.
Yes. And,
fascinating.
The major vehicle, the big one, was like at about 8,000 feet. Some of them flew over at 12, 14,000, 15,000 feet. And I can say this because I'm an ex-Navy pilot and I know how to judge distances. And what I'm saying is some of them, none of them came underneath the big one, but many of them came very slow. Some of them parked, but they would go around the big one, leaving a real large gap. Not getting close to it, just going around it. And now the anti-aircraft shells are going and trying to blow up those. So that went on essentially for hours. And it's unbelievable that hundreds of people didn't have heart attacks.
Uh-huh.
And didn't get sick and didn't go running for shelter. Now, this point I think is extremely interesting. At the same time that this took place, the Germans were bombing London. So everybody in London is looking for some sort of shelter they can dive into.
Uh-huh.
Here we have a situation with hundreds of vehicles being fired at. Obviously, they must have been bombers or fighters or whatever. And nobody got really scared.
That is interesting.
Southern California was, you could say, hypnotized, whatever you want to say.
I see where you're
going. They were mind controlled to not get upset. We actually went to sleep, Jeff, really.
That couldn't happen under normal circumstances.
Under normal circumstances, no way. So 500,000 people, minds were controlled not to get upset.
Well, that's it. That's really, we're electrical beings. That's not hard to do. We know the frequencies of anxiety, stress, fear, anything, and we can broadcast them, and people will react accordingly. So for visitors from afar or from near to be able to do that to an entire large geographical area like L.A., lay down a big coverage beam, like the beam that hits you from the ocean, but much bigger. Yes, they could do that, and that's a very good point you make. That would explain why people were out in a quasi-festive atmosphere watching this show. It also suggests, though, with the numbers of other craft and the numbers of other naval ships, both floating and in dry dock, who were apparently firing at these things, that far more than the 4,700 rounds of anti-aircraft that are commonly pointed to as being used were in fact expended that night. Maybe 10, 20,000. We don't know. And the shrapnel had to be coming down all over the place.
Yes, and that's what did put holes in roofs of houses.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of that.
There may be
people listening right now who still have pieces of that shrapnel in home, sitting on the mantle or whatever. A lot of people found pieces of it. So, yeah, very good point. Why not? And this is right after Pearl Harbor. And you'd think that people would involuntarily, at least, have fear of something extraordinary like this. And they would think that the Japanese are attacking us. And they wouldn't stand out in the streets. Like you say, they'd dive for anything they could come up with that would be a safe place. Very interesting.
And nobody was scared. I couldn't believe that. Nobody was even frightened. Everybody was just awestruck at this event. It's amazing.
That really is. Within hours of the end of the Battle of L.A., the air raid, Secretary of Naval Operations Frank Knox held a press conference saying that the entire incident was a false alarm due to anxiety and war nerves of the public and the men manning the anti-aircraft batteries. Knox's comments were followed by statements from the Army the next day that reflected General George C. Marshall's belief that the incident might have been caused by commercial airplanes used as a psychological warfare campaign to generate panic.
Wow. Wow.
There's more. Some contemporary press outlets suspected a cover-up. An editorial in the Long Beach Independent wrote, "There is a mysterious reticence about the whole affair, and it appears that some form of censorship is trying to halt discussion of the matter." Speculation was rampant as to invading airplanes and their bases. Theories included a secret base in northern Mexico that the Japanese had, as well as Japanese submarines stationed offshore with the capacity to carry airplanes. Others speculated that the incident was neither staged nor was it exaggerated to give coastal defense industries an excuse to move further inland. Finally, Representative Leland Ford of Santa Monica called for a congressional investigation, saying, quote, "None of the explanations so far offered or removed the episode from the category of complete mystification," he said. So there you go. There were some people who figured it out right away that there was a cover-up.
Yes.
So the official word came from Washington through General Marshall that nothing happened. Be happy. Forget about it. Go back to sleep. Whatever. Now, let's see here. Hold on. During the course of a fireside report to the nation delivered by President Roosevelt on 23 February 1942, a Japanese submarine rose up out of the sea off Elwood, that's just north of Santa Barbara and Goleta. I used to live there, and pumped 13 shells into the Tidewater refinery installations there, a bunch of piers and oil drilling equipment. The shots seemed designed to punctuate the president's statement that, quote, the broad oceans, which have been heralded in the past as our protection from attack, have become endless battlefields on which we are constantly being challenged by our enemies. Now, the funny thing about the Elwood attack, that submarine had on board one of its first officers, a man, a Japanese, who worked in that oil field in the earlier 1930s and was abused and tormented by the Americans who he worked with. They were calling him apparently derogatory names because of his Japanese ancestry and heritage. And he went back to Japan when the war started and volunteered to lead a submarine to shell the oil field because he knew exactly where it was on the coast. And that's exactly what happened. So he was on board getting his revenge. Isn't that funny?
That's amazing. That's amazing.
So, okay. Tell us more. What did the L.A. news media have to say in the following days? I quoted the Washington official military response. What did the L.A. papers say?
They pretty much said what you said. That was just the story. Mm-hmm. And people were sort of forced to accept it. And it was surprising, too, that so many people simply got up, they got dressed, they had breakfast, they got in their car, and they went to work. And so how long the mines were controlled, not just during the event, but I think to soften it down. Because if you could accept that these were the Nordic Navy battle group, who were in no way trying to attack California. They were simply coming over, monitoring what you were doing. And so there was nothing hostile about what they did. We're firing at them, of course.
Right.
But they never did anything to us.
Right. Right.
The whole time.
Funny.
And it's interesting that if you could put yourself in one of the flagships watching this and knowing that you have control over these people, they're not going to run out in the street and they're not going to get a car, get in an automobile and go racing down the road to try to get out of town.
Uh-huh.
They're just going to listen to this and watch it, and it's going to be a peaceful event.
It's amazing.
It's unbelievable,
yeah,
for that many vehicles to come over and not be published.
I agree. They held it to one. They got away with that.
They did, yes.
Huh. Now, if you look under Bill Tompkins in Guests on the left-hand side of Rents.com, you'll see live-action film and stills of the Battle of L.A. That's a video that I put together with Hanny. And second is shortwave news broadcast of the Battle of L.A. and more original film footage. That's the one I just played for you. Daylight coverage. Got some photos here. They're overlays of contemporary views of the area where the attack occurred. And you'll see overlaid over them a couple of stills of the nighttime shots of the searchlights acquiring the object that they say was alone. But you get an idea of the enormity of the spectacle. And I think what we're talking about here is these people were not acting normal. This is not a normal response to something like that. This is war. And they were thinking that this, most of them who were thinking about anything, were probably thinking this was a Japanese operation. So they're going to stand out in the middle of the street and look up? I don't think so. But
for
by all
hours,
means, look
that's
at
what
look,
people
yeah,
did.
Yeah, look at the videos. They're fascinating. And there have been some videos that are CGI, but I think these are examples of real footage of the object. There's one frame in the live-action film and stills of the Battle of L.A., the first video up there. You'll get a close-up view of the so-called singular object, the one big, large one. That's interesting. And other than that, you'll see a lot of interesting and fascinating. What this was, I guess, just what was it, Bill? You wouldn't call it an invasion. Was this just some kind of a knock on the door that they were giving us?
That's really all it is. And consensus of what took place both in the secret think tank at Douglas and then later at TRW Space Systems in Redondo Beach, that event took place as a simple organization cruising over here, interested in what was taking place, particularly what you were doing with nuclear, and now you've started a war. So they're monitoring this on a peaceful basis. There was no hostilities at all from them.
Mm-hmm.
None. And to me, it's a well-planned penetration from way out in the galaxy, monitoring what's going to be taking place with these people in this war.
Right.
And when we talk about wars, at some point, Jeff, I'd like to get into that.
Yeah, we will. We will.
It's amazing how we can't stop having wars.
We have just another minute or two till the top of the hour break, then we'll come back and talk about some more things to do with the Battle of L.A. and some other issues as well that Bill knows so very well. Looking at that first video under Bill's name, you'll see a number of live-action scenes, and I've strung them together and repeated them over and over again so you can acquire them with your eye pretty well, and they're fascinating to watch. This was an enormous event, a huge aerial spectacle. Navy ships firing. Then, if you live near the breakwater or any of the shipyards, you heard this boom, boom. There must have been enormous numbers of aircraft ordnance being fired and aircraft guns. Who knows? This is what was the elevation again? Do you think, Bill, of the primary craft?
It was 8,000 to 9,000 feet for the major one. Some of the smaller vehicles were. Like 7,000 feet. Others were up as high as 16,000 feet.
Did you at any time hear or see any Army aircraft up there?
No, never.
Okay. That doesn't mean they weren't, but that just means you didn't see any.
Yeah, right. We never.
Because my friend Katie told me she watched them and they were going right at, she could see their guns flashing.
Well, see, I think you said she was living in
Culver City.
Culver City. I would have thought that the big vehicle. Well, no, it couldn't have been seen from Culver City. You're right. Okay. So she may have had a difference. Like TRW said, there were four large vehicles. We were just looking at one, and we never saw another big one.
Right.
And the one that we saw simply parked. It came in very slow and stopped right over Long Beach. And it was there for almost an hour. And they kept shooting at it. We said, how can it not crash? And it's got to crash. But it had some sort of invisible shield that the shells were simply bursting on the outside
right.
and not even touching the vehicle.
Right. Well, take a look at that video, and all of you listening will really get an eyeful of what Bill saw, what kind of a night it was. There were clouds in the sky. It wasn't completely overcast, but there were clouds, and there was a lot of smoke up there from the thousands of rounds of AA that were going off. So it must have been one hell of a fireworks show. All right, hold on a minute, and Bill and I will be right back with hour number two of our visit tonight.